Oh, boy. That's quite a picture. Shut up. And an overcoat. What do you got on your neck?
A scarf.
Scarf? Yeah. You don't look so tough.
Fat. That's what she said. I said, I like that picture. You know, she said, oh, you look real hard on there. I said, well, in those days you had to be hard, you know, because if you wasn't, you know. I mean, I have been in places, you know. I mean, it's right up until in 77. Right here in Virginia, I had a guy knock me down and kick me right in the face. You know, he said, oh, you trying to be a man. And before I could say a word, bam, you know. When I tried to get up, this guy kicked me in the face. And the next day I had two black eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I seen him a few months later, I said, why you do that to me? You know, I don't bother nobody. You know that, you know. Puerto Rican guy, right? And he was so blown out of his mind off the drugs.
Yeah, he didn't even know
he did it, you know.
Right. And so that was always something that went on from the 50s on, that you had to be tough because you never knew what was going
to
happen.
Oh, yeah, you have to be ready. You know, I mean, to me, you know. If you act all meek and humble, man, you're getting ready to get stepped on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I still have a tendency to be that way, you know. Because to me, that's the way I was brought up like that. You know, if you wasn't ready, you know, and rough, you couldn't make it. Not one bit, you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, you'd get stepped on in a minute.
And that's because you were a dyke, right?
Right, right.
Huh.
You know, a lot of people figured they could take advantage of, especially straight people, you know, guys and whatnot, uh-huh. You know. They figured they could take advantage of this, you know. I've been put in a position where I was raped 2 or 3 times because I was gay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna do this, you know. And it's really, if you don't really just hang out there and just, you know, and you just sit back, you know, and you don't struggle for it or fight for it, then you might as well hang it up. You ain't gonna get through it. You ain't gonna do nothing with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you know you were a stud? Like, you didn't have any questions and you knew right away which role you were going to
play. No. The first time I had ever had an affair with anybody was with Jerry Jones, right?
Uh-huh.
I was really fascinated by her, right? Because she had all these women, you know, and I couldn't figure this out. You know, I didn't know what this was about. You know, I said, well, I had been messing around with girls at my age, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, like, Jerry's an older person, right? She's got all these bras and they go out and they make money and they come home and give it to her and this and that, you know. And my mother gave me a party at the Zanzibar. It was a club for graduation. And I slipped away, right? I was supposed to meet Jerry, right? And I slip away. We wind up getting into it, you know, and I'm there on the bottom. And I said, wow, this ain't about nothing. You know, I don't like this, you know. So then I decided I want to go the other way.
How excited you decided,
yep.
Huh?
Yep. Yep. I said, no, I don't like this. Nah. So I just reversed it, you know. And which I was doing all the time, you know, but at 13, you don't know what you're doing.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Uh-huh.
But with Jerry, you know, I was really just fascinated by her, you know. And then when I got involved with her, I knew that that wasn't the way I wanted it to go, you know.
Uh-huh.
So then we just became buddies, you know, for a long time.
And then you started learning how to be a stud for her, is that
right.
It?
Right.
Huh. Huh. So when you met Jerry, you were really young then.
Yeah.
And you weren't. Yeah. Were you back from Toronto?
I hadn't even left.
Yeah.
I hadn't even left. I hadn't even went to Toronto at that time when I was messing around with Jerry. Because I remember, I didn't know Jerry was so well known, and she knew where I lived, but not the exact house. So it was like during the summer. She comes up in front of my house in a cab, and she's sitting there. The cab's blowing, and she's calling my name. My mother's across the street visiting a neighbor, and they hear it too, same time I did. So I come out, and I walk to the cab, and I'm talking to her, you know. And she told me she's been looking for me, right? So when she pulls away in the cab, I'm going to say, come here. And I said, what? She said, was that Jerry Jones? And I went, yeah. I don't want you hanging with her, and blah, 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 you know. That just made me want to hang with her that much.
You
know, so. I don't know, we just got real tight, you know, we became buddies and whatnot after that. It was, you know, and then I hung around with a lot of butchers, you know, from Canada and whatnot, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, like, I lived up there for about 2.5 to 3 years, and I was always with them, you know. I didn't know any black people in Canada. and I was always with them. So when I came back here, I was real ready. Yeah, I was real ready.
Did you know Anne too before you went to Toronto?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know her through your mother?
No, I met Anne. What was I doing? Anne, how I met Anne Hubbard. Anne Hubbard was, they used to have a little hotel on William, near Michigan. And I was in there, I had went in there to visit somebody, and when I came past this room, the door was open, and Anne Hubbard and this stub broad, Chico, was in there making the bed, right? And that was the first time I'd seen her, and the first time she'd seen me. And she asked, I stopped and I talked to Chico for a minute, because I knew her, I didn't know Anne, and she introduced me to Anne. And then Anne told me later, you know, I started running into her here and there, you know. And she told me that she asked Chico who I was and this and that. And then I guess I seen her a few years later, her and Chico had broke up. And then we started fooling around.
You were 13 years old when you?
Yeah. So how that's how me and Anne broke up. I got high one night and told her how old I was and scared her to death. She got scared, oh God.
God.
She said, I thought you were 18 years old. And I said, nope, I'm 13. And that broke us up right there, you know. But then we messed around again after a few years later, you know. We all of us got together and left Buffalo and went to Albany. That was where everything was happening at, you know. It was real.
Oh, yeah.
We all packed up and went to Albany and whatnot. And I think they ran everybody out of town except me. Because at the time I was pregnant with my daughter. That's where I had my daughter at, in Albany. And I wasn't going out all the time like they were. Every now and then I'd go out, you know. And they were being seen in the streets and this and that, you know. And I guess it was a lot of people coming to Albany because it was wide open, you know. I mean, with everything. You could do anything. You could just turn a corner and make money, you know. It was something else. And Anne and all the rest of them, they got, like, they call them floaters. They got floaters out of town. They go before the judge, and the judge tell them, hey, you got to leave, you know. But I was there for quite a while.
This is in the early 60s?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you when it was. In 57, because that's when my daughter was born.
57?
Yeah. In 57, my daughter was born. And she was born right there in Albany. And what made me come back was she had gotten sick. And they wouldn't let me sign her in the hospital. They said I wasn't of age, you know. I said, well, that's kind of stupid. You know, I had her here in this hospital, and I'm her mother, and I can't sign her in the hospital. So I had to come back to Buffalo and have my mother take her to the hospital. So that's what made me come
back
from there.
And then you stayed. So you were liking Albany then?
Mm-hmm.
What made it a good place?
I don't know. You know, it was a lot more places to go and a lot more going on than it was in Buffalo, you know. It was always live entertainment. And, you know, I mean, it was just different, you know. It was a lot more fun than being here. Yeah. Like I said, well, here, you know, you was always running from the cops and this and that. Well, there, too, if you do something, you ain't got business. You know, you'd be in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. But other than that, you know, it was much better than being in Buffalo to me. But I always wanted, wherever I went, I always wound up right back here.
Right
anyway,
back here.
You know?
So what made a good time in the 50s?
Well, to me, I guess when I first left, like in 53, right straight through to me, because, yeah, well, in 53 I left home, and I was in Canada, back in Buffalo, and in Albany, and back in Buffalo. Then in the early 60s, I left and went to Detroit, and I still came back to Buffalo, you know. So I mean it was to me it was all right, especially after it got so where the police didn't harass the gay people and whatnot, you know. After that was all passed, and it was all right to me.
When I meant what made a good time is when you went out. What did people like to do?
Oh, that's all we used to do: go out to the gay bars, and we a lot of us would leave. Like when the bar closed, we'd go to Dante's Infernos on Ellicott Street, the Italian restaurant. We'd all meet there and have dinner afterwards or something like that, you know. And, well, then they had after-hour places, too, but they didn't allow. No, like now, white people can get in a black after-hour joint. Then they couldn't.
They couldn't.
Nobody white could get in an after-hour joint.
What were the names of some of the black after-hour joints?
Cherry Red.
Where was that?
That was on Eagle near Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And they had another one called Big Eyes on Michigan between Eagle and Clinton. Then he had the Lincoln Club, which was on, all of them was right together, Clinton, mm-hmm. up over the Lucky Clover. And he had the 469, which was on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, back then, later on, you know, they started letting a few gay girls in, white girls. But back then, when they first, in, like in the early 50s, they didn't allow no white people in the door, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Were these all gay, or were they just black?
You know, it was just black. You know.
And was it all right for lesbians to be in there?
Yeah.
And you could go dressed as a man with your lady?
Right. Right.
And they didn't care?
Once in a while, you might find somebody that gets kind of nasty or want to start some stuff or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the early 60s, my mother, because I used to go with my mother a lot, you know. My mother and me, and I don't know, it was a bunch of us. We were in Cherry Ridge. And this guy started bothering my mother. And I went to get off the stool. Before I could get off the stool, my mother had punched him and knocked him cold. And he was laying across the table like this. You know, I went to grab the guy. She hit him. You know, but it was, you know, very, I mean, not often when you go in there would they bother you. You know, mm-hmm. you find maybe one or two out of the crowd that wanted to start, you know. But other than that, you know, it was all right.
Did people dance there?
Mm-hmm.
And so lesbians could dance there?
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. Yeah. You could go there at the time the bar stay closed at 3:00. You could go there at 3:00 and stay for 2 or 3 days if you want.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that now, you know. But I don't go to after hour joints now because they got pimps in there and hustlers and, you know, dudes selling drugs and shit. And I think you'd run into a lot more problems now than you would have back then.
That's all right.
Yeah. Because, you know, they got these young guys and they think they're, you know, and I think they cause a lot more problems. Then, more or less, when you went to an after hour joint then, there was mostly older people, you know. Not old people, but older people than I was. Well, now you go to an after-hour joint now, and there's all these pimps and drug dealers and prostitutes and whatnot in there, and you find yourself getting a lot of trouble. Liz told me, Liz Annunziata, when I was going, she went to one not too long ago, and she took, well, see, now they'll let white people in, right? And she took some guy with her, and some girl tried to approach him. She told the girl to leave him alone. She wound up getting in a fight with the girl and getting her blouse tore off in the after-hour joint. I said, yeah, well, that's why I don't go to, you know, if I wanted to go somewhere after the bar closed, I'd go to Ann's if she's having a party, something mm-hmm. like that, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I don't have no hassle. But as far as going to after hour joints, I don't bother. And then the way they charge you now, before you just go in after hour joint and buy your drinks, you know, it would cost you just about the same thing it would in a bar. But now you go to an after hour joint and it costs you $2 to go in the door plus $2 for every drink.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to be a member of these joints back then?
No.
You just went
at sometimes they might would have cards printed up, you know, to say you. It's like, now I got a card in my wallet to say I belong to the vets.
Uh-huh.
That's the American Legion.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a place down on William Street now. And sometimes I go down there and play poker. But I'm not a member. But you have the card in case the police come in or something like that, you know.
Were you in the Army?
No.
No.
No. No. I thought about it, but I didn't have time for that. I was doing too many other things.
Well, when you all were dressed in men's clothes in the 50s, what were the ladies wearing?
Dresses, skirts, you know, sometimes slacks.
Sometimes slacks.
Yeah, whatever, you know. Well, most of the ladies that I was going out with wore dresses or skirts and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know. There were times when you see couples out together that you wouldn't know who was who. But this to me was more or less like with the white gay kids, you know. More or less with the blacks. You could always distinguish who was a stud and who was a femme. But I used to be fascinated a lot of times, you know, because I see some of the white kids and well, she's acting butch and she's acting butch, and both of them are dancing together and they're kissing. You know, you don't know who's who. You know,
I say, hey, well, huh? When you say she's acting butch and she's acting butch, what distinguishes a butch?
I mean, you know, the mannerism, you know. I mean, the way he was dressed, you know, the way he talked, the way he act, you know. You see two girls, both of them acting butch and both of them dancing together. You just, well, who's who, you know. But you seen a lot of it, you know. And I mean, after a while, when I first seen it, I was like, well, who's who there, you know. But, yeah, I don't see, well, I have seen a little of it in Betsy's, you know. But after getting used to seeing it, you know, I don't think nothing of it, you know.
What's the difference between a butch and a femme in your mind?
Well, like I said, the mannerism, the way they dress.
What dress,
you know,
we got?
Well, to me, a butch acts more mannish. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, my people, like, if she acted like I acted, I wouldn't fool around it. You know, no. You know, I mean, if she's going to act butch and I'm going to be butch, I mean, no, that don't turn me on, you know.
Uh-huh.
To me, you got to dress like a lady or, you know, whatever, you know. You can't go out and act the same way I act, dress the same way I dress, you know, and then we be together. No, I don't like that.
When you say mannerisms, acting like a man, you mean like being on top of the situation or being ready to fight or what?
Any of that.
Any of that.
Well, being gay then, you had to be ready to fight at any time, you know, because you never know, you know, mm-hmm. when the occasion might arise, you know, that you might have to get off into it. I've had, like, confrontations with people, you know, and we wind up arguing, and it might not even be a fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it might be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have too many, you know, because I didn't have too many people bothering me, you know, like, I, at one time, I had a reputation that's so bad, I used to go home sometime and cry about it, you know.
Oh, my God, who was bad?
You know, it was like, hey, that's Pat Gilbert, you know, don't fool around with her, you know, she got some prostitutes and whatnot, and she'll cut you up and this and that, you know. And this, you know, and I wasn't like that, you know. And I used to hear it all the time, you know, and I used to get really upset and cry about it a lot, you know. I just sit around and say, well, I know I'm not that rough, I'm not that tough, you know, I'm just defending what I want to do, you know, what I want to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't want nobody up in my face, you know, like, talking a lot of bunk to me, then, hey, can I get into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, if you leave me alone, I don't bother nobody, you know. And I used to sit and wonder, you know, why is my name being floated around like this, Pat Gilbert this, Pat Gilbert that, you know. And I said, wow, you know. But, like I said, then after a while, you know, you get used to it, you know. When I first got out there, it was something else, you know. It wasn't like I wasn't accepted by gay people, you know. But when you first come out and you're young, you know, they have an air or a tendency, you know, to give you a little feeling of rejection at first, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to smooth your way in, you know. Sometimes it gets kind of drastic, you know.
How do you smooth your way in?
Like I said, you know, you got to let people know that you're not the big brute that, you know, that they think you are, you know, that, you know, you just like they are, you know, you're just defending what you think you want to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't come out with this big bully attitude with people and stuff like that, you know, which is what they thought about me, you know, which I felt like my life, what I was gay, and I did have girls that was hustling and whatnot, but that, hey, that was my business, you know. I mean, if they wanted to work and I wanted to do my thing, I did my thing and they do theirs, you know. But don't look at me as no big brutal thing, you know, because I'm off into this other thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times people have said that some people come out as femmes and then they become butches. Do you feel that's true in the black community? Two things. First of all, do women remain femmes and they stay in the community? Or some people say that femmes might stay in the community a while and then go back into the straight life. And, well, Anne is an example of somebody who's been a femme all the time, right? But what's your impression of that?
Yeah, well, I've seen them come and go. I've seen a lot of girls come out and be femme and wind up butch. Uh-huh. I've seen a lot of girls that were butch turn femme.
Yeah. Huh?
Right. A lot. A whole lot.
And they remain femme?
Right.
Huh.
I've seen a lot of them, you know. And sometimes it shocks me, you know. After, you know, because me, I could never do that, you know, to say, well, I'm going to turn femme, go out with a guy, or I'm going to turn femme, you just grew up, and I couldn't do it, you know. I've been living the way I am too long. But I've seen a lot of it, you know. I've seen a lot of girls that I wouldn't even believe, you know, that could switch from one side to the other, and they do, you know.
They do, huh?
Yeah.
Do you think that the majority of people, though, once they're in their role, keep them?
I would say so, yeah. Mm-hmm. You find a few here and there that, you know, switch from one side to the other, you know. But most that I know, you know, once they get off into it, they stay, you know, mm-hmm. they play the part that they originally started at.
Yeah, one thing that was real clear from the white women that we interviewed, but it's not as clear from, well, we haven't really interviewed so many black women, but people talked about in the 50s that if you were butch, you didn't let a woman touch you.
True.
And you think that's true, huh?
True. Definitely. Right. You know, it was an ego thing. You know, that's all it was. You know, I know that now. You know, because I was that way for a long time. Oh man, no. You know, like, hey, when you're making love, I'm supposed to do that. You know, that's my job. You know, and you don't touch me. You know, and I stayed that way for years. You know,
what time period did begin to change in the 70s? The 60s?
Yeah,
late
in the early 70s.
Early 70s.
Yeah, because then I began to feel like it's the whole thing is a partnership. You know, and if you denying her what she wants to do, then the whole thing is not complete, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfair to her, you know. Mm-hmm. If there's something she wants to do and you deny her this, you know, it's not right, you know. And I began to think about it that way, but at first, no.
Who told you that that's how you were supposed to be? When did you first learn that
women
got to be touched?
No, it was just something that I thought out. Well, over a period of time, like I have been with different ones, right? And they'd express their feeling, I said, nah, you know. And then I began to think about it, you know. Well, why not try it, you know? And, you know, because I could imagine how I'd feel in the midst of making love and be denied what I want to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about it that way. I just put myself in that position, you know,
mm-hmm.
to think about how I'd feel if, you know, I want to do this and you say no. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started thinking the other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what I was thinking about is, where did you learn that it was best for studs not to be touched? Did somebody ever tell you that?
Nah. I don't know. I guess it was a thought that came along with, you know.
With the role.
Yeah. You know, I just thought about it that way, you know. Cause like, well, when I first got started off into it, it was, I don't know, I guess girls that hang around, like when they go into school, they do different things together. That's how I really got off into it. But at the time, like before I left home, I still had boyfriends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was different girls I was seeing and whatnot, you know. And then when I, you know, like I always liked, at the time, by me being so young, I always liked to hang around the older crowd. You know,
mm-hmm.
this way I could learn things. You know, if I hang around somebody my age, 13, they don't know. You know, so I hang around somebody older, then I know what's happening. Awesome. You know, so. But it was always just something that I don't know that came along with the role that I felt. You know, when I first started, you know, that I do the touching, they don't touch me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older and got into it, you know, I felt like it was really unfair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it just took a lot of thought, a whole train of thought to think about it, you know,
mm-hmm.
to deal with it, you know.
Hmm. Yeah. You want to finish up with me? When was the first time, how old were you when you thought that you might be a lesbian? When was the first time you thought about it?
I guess when I left home when I was 13, because at that time, I was going out with two girls, and they were much older than I was.
Uh-huh.
And my mother used to say, be home at 9 o'clock, you know. I'd say, hell, 9 o'clock, things are just getting good, you know. And I just finally, what made me leave home was, I hadn't even thought about it. It wasn't something I planned. I knew I wanted to do more than, you know, I didn't want to come home at 9 o'clock,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kenny and I call him my uncle. By the way, tell Bobby Kenny's dead.
Oh, okay.
him and I were in Bingo's drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of my mother's, Vi, they called her. She came by in her car and she saw me sitting there, right? So I went out and talked to her in the car and I said, well, she said she wasn't going over to my house, right? And I said, well, when you see my mother, don't tell her you see me in here, all right? Okay. She pulls off, she heads in the direction of my house. A little while later, the phone rings. My mother, she bawled Kenny out. She bawled the barmaid out. She told me what she was going to do to me when I got home. And I left. When I walked out of that bar, I just left. I didn't go home no more.
Huh. Who first introduced you to Bingo's? Or to A&M?
Well, my mother used to hang in there. She was gay at the time.
Mm-hmm.
My mother hung in Bingo's to Mardi Gras. There was three gay bars right together. The Mardi Gras, let me see, no, Bingo's, the Mardi Gras, and the Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother hung in the Mardi Gras and the Bingo's.
And Dugan's, right? Wasn't it Dugan's?
Yeah, yeah. Where was that at? I remember the name, but I don't even remember where it was.
It slipped my mind to when where it was.
The three I just named were right on Eagle. One was they Eagle and Ellicott, one was Eagle and Oak, or Eagle and Eagle and Oak, Eagle and Ellicott, and then right a couple doors from the Mardi Gras was Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did your mother know Ann too?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And were they kind of like friends?
No. No. Wait a minute. My mother didn't know Ann until my mother had met Ann through me.
Is that right?
No. She didn't know her at first. She knew Jerry Jones. Everybody knew her.
Everybody knew Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
So your mother was already out in the gay boys, and that's how you met?
Well, my mother was born with this girl, Rose Pinkowski, and we called her Pinky. And Pinky and my mother was living together, so we was all living in the same house together. You know. And when the girls came over from Toronto, they used to all come to our house and stay at ours.
Huh. Is Pinky still up here and called Pinky now?
I think Pinky died. I think I remember my mother telling me that she had died.
Huh.
I think she told me that.
And, well, am I right that must have been a black and white couple?
Right.
Right, and there was no problem with that in the bars?
No. Because my mother more or less hung. My mother didn't, I can't really say that either. She went to black bars. Because my mother was a bartender.
She was.
Yeah, she was a tender. I mean, the barmaid.
Uh-huh.
If they had any problems, I didn't hear nothing about it. You know, she didn't tell me nothing.
Did she tend bars for straight bars? Straight black bars?
Right.
And so that would also be that you don't know, that she didn't know of any gay black bars.
Right.
Hmm. That's interesting that there were.
I really don't think there was any. I really don't.
Somebody mentioned a bar on Cherry Street. Does that ring?
Yeah. Oh, 557.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I got some pictures that we took in that bar.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You have to get them. Make your lip. What years was that open?
Oh, wow. You want to turn it off for a minute? Then you won't waste. No. I go in there now. If I go in there now, I've taken her in there, and I'd be the only gay person in there. But I know everybody. You know, hey, Pat, where you been? And I might buy one drink, and I don't have to buy another drink the rest of the night. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody buying new drinks mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Now she's got an aunt that's gay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And her aunt's people, which is a butch.
Mm-hmm.
She won't take Ruth out to certain bars because she's thinking about, I guess years ago, you know, if you go out, then you got to deal with people picking at you and bothering you guys, fooling around with you like that. And I've taken her out, and we don't plan it. You know, I'm driving, and I said, well, let's stop here. I come up Genesee and just about every bar from Fillmore on up to Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
I can stop in there and everybody, hi, Pat, how you doing? They buy me drinks, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she goes back and she tells them, well, me and Pat, we stopped in this straight bar and we had all these drinks and we stopped in this different place and nobody bothers Pat, so how come you can't go out? It's the idea, I think she's got it in her mind of what used to happen. Some time ago. But if the people know you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
They might say something if they're not familiar with you mm-hmm. or something like that, you know? And she don't want to take her lady out because she don't want nobody to look at her. I said, well, I don't want to take no lady out that ain't nobody going to look at, because if ain't nobody going to look at her, I don't want her either. What do I want her for?
So how does her aunt meet people, or doesn't she?
Well, I guess she meets them in her own way, or... They go to Betsy. They go to the gay bars.
They go to the gay bars.
They go to the gay bars. They go to Ann Hubbard's, you know.
Uh-huh.
But they will not go to straight bars.
Straight bars.
No. I took them out one night, and I go right here on Allen, by Days Park here.
Yeah.
And it's an Indian joint, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see more Indians in there than anything, okay? And I took them in there one night, and I'm shooting pool. And I looked up, and they were over in the corner hugging and kissing and dancing. And I said, hey, don't do that in here, you know. Because if you want to do that, then we'll go to Betsy's.
Right, right.
Because the people in there, you know, they know what's happening, but I give them the respect. You understand? Mm-hmm. When I walk in there, I'm the only gay person in there, right? So I'm not going in there and start hugging and kissing with her and dancing with her, you know. And to me, that's being disrespectful to them, you know, like this is flaunting it in their face. And then you might run into one guy, you know, right. Indian is terrible when they drink.
Right.
Really?
Right.
All right? So you might run into one Indian guy that don't like what he's seeing and might cause you some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then there you go. So just to keep it down, then you cool it. You know, you take that where it's supposed to be, you know. And I had to tell him that night, right? So, but to them, you know, like if her and I go out, you know,